Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Coffee with Scott Adams, the finest thing that ever happened to you. And if you'd like to take this experience up, all you need is a cup or a mug or a glass, a tankard, chalice, a stein, a canteen jug or flask, a vessel of any kind. Fill it with your favorite liquid. I like coffee. And join me now for the unparalleled pleasure, the dopamine hit of the day, the thing makes everything better. It's called simultaneous sip, and it happens now. Ah, well, I love you too. Thank you for that. Good stuff. Ah. Well, in the most important news of the day, Russian President Putin has signed a decree to honor the American actor Steven Seagal. And he won the important State Order of Friendship. So I guess Seagal's been a regular visitor to Russia, and he even has citizenship. He's got a passport. He's a special representative to the United States and Japan. Pretty good job. So I think Steven Seagal will probably be sent to the front lines. I believe he'll be fighting with the Wagner Group. And if you see Steven Seagal running toward you, you better run. Have I ever done an impression of Steven Seagal running in one of his movies? It goes a little like this. I don't know why. If you've ever seen his movies, he's what you call an inelegant runner. You know, some people run really macho. It's like... Yeah, but you need some running lessons from somebody. All right. Well, that wasn't much of a story. Have you noticed that it's a sort of a slow news time? Is anybody noticing that? Like there's something big coming or something? It's like the news just sort of stopped. It's making me wonder if the news organizations are just operating on a budget now. Because have you noticed that the news is a lot of, well, there was a thing that everybody knows happened. Let us give you some opinions on it. Like the actual news part seems to have completely disappeared. And now it's just commenting on personalities and you know, mysteries that we don't understand. So Marco Rubio did a tweet on the so-called UAPs, these unidentified advanced whatever, UFOs. Let's call them UFOs. And Politico has a story about it. Now, keep in mind that Marco Rubio, I believe he has access to the secrets, right? Like the country's secrets. Is that right? Confirm that. Then Marco Rubio would have more access because he's on whatever committees. Yeah, so he knows what the military secrets are. And he tweeted the story from, I think it was Politico, and Politico was saying, and I have to admit, today is the first day that I said to myself, there might be some unidentified advanced objects up there. I have to admit, I never took it seriously. But listening to this one reporter from one pilot, apparently there's tons of corroboration that pilots have been seeing things for years. Yeah, they've had a bunch of near collisions. And they all see them. And apparently it's something that all the pilots talk about, and they all know what's up there. And it seems to, whatever they are, do not seem to respond to normal physics. Now, here are the things, if you're trying to analyze this story and ask yourself if it's real, here are the things you would want to ask yourself. Number one, why has nobody ever gotten a good picture of one? No good picture. Just fuzzy pictures. Well, I'm not sure they have a good picture. I mean, there's just like a tic-tac, right? Secondly, one of the things that caught my interest was they were not detecting these until they upgraded their radar. What's that tell you? They weren't detecting them until they upgraded their radar. Well, apparently they suspected it might have been a radar problem. You know, maybe there was some kind of, you know, junk in the radar. But they ruled that out because they can also detect them on infrared, and they also have visual. So they have visual plus infrared. Do you think that's enough? Or is it just 3 points of confirmation bias? Because suppose the radar is off and they never really looked at the, I don't know, maybe the infrared is picking up birds or some damn thing. And maybe what the pilots see is not exactly what's up there. So you have at least three possibilities that, you know, people are just seeing things that aren't there. I would think it would be nearly impossible for all of this alleged activity to be happening without us knowing for sure. If it's true. If they're really up there and it's like all the time, it's really common, and it's been happening for years or decades, and we've got all this, you know, all this information about them, and we can't confirm it. That feels a little weird. Do you know what it sounds like? When I was a kid, there were all these ghost hunters, and you'd always hear, oh yeah, a lot of us saw that ghost, and then we used our ghost spotting machine, and sure enough, it detected a ghost. So now we've got eyewitnesses, plus our machine detected it. You know, you can talk yourself into ghosts. You can talk yourself into Bigfoot and Nessie. So it's entirely possible that we're talking ourselves into UFOs. But I have to admit, today's the first time when I, you know, read the body of evidence that I thought, maybe. But then, did we really go through this whole Chinese balloon thing, and they were all just balloons? Like, is it possible that every time you shoot one down, it turns out to be a balloon, a weather balloon? Makes you wonder. I would still bet against them being advanced alien crafts. What do you think? Place your bets. I say they are not advanced alien crafts. I don't know what they are, but anybody disagree? The thing that's interesting is that Marco Rubio thinks there's something to worry about up there. Now, I would agree with worrying. Worrying makes sense. You know, we should keep an eye on whatever the hell is going on. But, well, the Chinese drones, that wouldn't explain, it would explain everything except the not corresponding to physics. And I think the not corresponding to physics part could be false as well. You know, maybe it's just the way you see it. All right. Fox News reporting that Tucker had this guest, a Chinese virologist who was one of the ones who sounded the alarm in 2020 about where the coronavirus came from. Now, is it your belief that the U.S. government has confirmed that the virus came from the Wuhan lab? Is that what the news told you? Did the news say the U.S. government has confirmed? No, it didn't. Apparently, there are a number of agencies within the government, and they have low levels of confidence that it came from that lab, but it's not even a government consensus. So on the right, people are treating it like it's a confirmed fact, but the government has not confirmed it. It's just moving heavily in that direction. So if you act like it's confirmed, you're probably going to be right. Probably. But not confirmed. However, the added part to the story on Tucker's show was that Dr. Li Mengyang said that the Chinese government intentionally manufactured and released the virus to nation. Yeah. Do you believe that? Do you believe that it was intentionally created and that it was intentionally released? That NPC? Yeah. See, the part I don't... don't worry, Donald's angry. The part that... I'm getting distracted by comments here. The part that doesn't make sense to me is I can't imagine China believing it would help them. I can't get past that. There would have to be a strategy for why that would be a good idea. Now, nobody's saying that the virus affects non-Chinese people more than Chinese people, right? Which at one point, there was some question whether that was the case because the infections were so low in China. But that was probably because of the lockdown. To hurt Trump? No, see, the trouble is that China would have to know that they would be hurting themselves at the same time. There's no feasible way that they thought releasing a pandemic was going to work in their favor. Like, I just don't see any reasoning that makes sense. You think the Democrats were behind it? That's even more conspiratorial. So I don't doubt that it was manufactured, and I don't doubt that it came from the Wuhan lab. We don't know for sure, but I do doubt that China would do it as an intentional strategy. Now, it could be that it escaped accidentally, but then they kept the doors open so everybody was equally infected or something. I don't know. Possible, I suppose. But it just doesn't seem like a good strategy. So I doubt it. All right. There's also some reporting, of course, on CNN, because they like to dunk on Fox News. So they're reporting all the 10 things that we found because of the Dominion lawsuit, which gave Dominion access, and now we've seen them in court, the court filings. We saw a bunch of emails, like from Murdoch, etc. And CNN's reporting that there are 10 things that we're learning that are embarrassing to Fox News. I read most of them, and none of them looked embarrassing. So here's what they think is outrageous. That Murdoch wants to give his customers what they're asking for, which was, at the time, more commentary about the election integrity. Is that wrong? The customers, the audience that Fox News has, wanted that content, and Tucker and Hannity accommodated and gave them that content. Now, and here's where CNN comes up with some fake news. You have to have fake news in order to sell this narrative, right? So CNN comes up with the fake news that, quote, these documents reveal that Fox News executives and hosts knew the truth about the election, and yet they peddled election lies to the audience. So that was their summary, that the Fox News executives knew, and yet they peddled the election lies to the audience. How in the world could anybody have known that? CNN is reporting that somebody knew the unknowable. And they do that with like a straight face, you know, figuratively speaking. How could you say that with a straight face? Now, I completely understand if they said something like the election was officially called, or there's no evidence of fraud that's reliable. Well, there was plenty of evidence, but it turned out the evidence was not reliable. So this is just outrageous. That when you see the press just create like a whole lie about their competitor. And the other quotes from Murdoch were, it's not a red or green issue, it's a green, meaning it's about money. At what point are you surprised that Fox News is running stories that its audience likes because they think they'll make more money that way? At what point are we supposed to be surprised by that? You know, it would be one thing if nobody understood that Fox News leans right and the others lean left. I mean, once you understand which way they lean, well, now I think the worst accusation is one that's basically the same that CNN got caught with. The worst one is that Murdoch let Jared Kushner see the campaign ads of Trump's competitor to prepare for them, I guess. And I thought to myself, well, that does sound pretty bad. That does sound more like, you know, directly influencing things more than just being the news. But isn't that exactly, yeah, that's what Donna Brazile did when she gave the debate questions to, was it to Hillary? Is that what happened? And, you know, nobody got fired for that. So that stuff's sort of in the noise. Once you understand that they're both in the bag for a team, the fact that they're talking to the team and working with them, it's not a, like a big surprise or anything. So I think that's why it's not making much of a dent. It wouldn't surprise anybody. So I asked this question on Twitter, in a Twitter poll. I said, is the press a hate group? 58%, well, here are the choices. I gave them a choice of yes, no, or F you, Scott. I figured that would be popular this week. 58% yes, the press is a hate group. 10% said no, and 32% said F you, Scott. Now, when I asked, is the press a hate group? Let me ask you this. How many people immediately understood that that had to be hyperbole? Did anybody get fooled by it? Were you all sure that that was hyperbole? Because an adult would know that there's no such thing as the press, that where they all act the same. There's no such thing as the press, like one entity of all similarity. Nobody believes that. So everybody would have known that is the press a hate group would be clear hyperbole. And that's good. Nobody complained. So it's good when people understand hyperbole in some situations, but sometimes maybe they don't. Well, I'd like to thank again. I can't remember if I did this on live stream, but black conservatives have been great to me this week. So most of the black, I think most or all of the black conservatives who have looked at my controversy this week and looked into it, the ones who looked into it, yeah, we are private. The ones who looked into it said, oh, that's no big deal. It's kind of alarming. Maybe it wasn't so good to use those words, but no real problem here. Now, how do you process that if you're the mainstream media? So as you know, I'm fully canceled. All of my books and comics and calendars and everything, fully canceled. How do you process the fact that black conservatives don't have a problem with what I said? Because if black conservatives don't have a problem with it, does that tell you it's about black people? Or does it tell you it's about how we're framing our politics? What does that tell you? If black conservatives and black liberals all said, oh, I see that's some racism there, then I'd say that's probably racism because the correlation is really clean. Okay, all black people of all types look at it, they're all offended, it's all the same. But what happens when one political side says it's not any kind of racism anybody's worried about, and the other side says it's the worst racism we've ever seen? Does that tell you that your opinions have been assigned by the media? It does. That's a very clear signal that it's not about race, but the entire media made it about race. I mean, it's about race, obviously, that's the topic. But if people who are American and black are looking at it and saying, I don't see what you're complaining about, doesn't look like a canceling situation to me, then you can rule out the fact that it's just about black and white. Could it be that the race industrial complex is once again finding a way to monetize race? Is there somebody monetizing race? Because that would be the most evil thing I could possibly think of, would, wouldn't you think? Imagine if you knew there was some entire industry who had figured out a way to monetize racial division. Now that would be evil. That would be evil. And what if the same group that was monetizing racial division had the power to frame any individual that they were talking about in the worst possible way? Well, that would be pretty bad. That would be pretty bad. So your worst possible situation is that the media, the Democrats, and maybe some other organizations are monetizing, creating racial unrest. I'm just putting that out there. Is there anybody who doubts that there is something that could be called, and by the way, I'm stealing this from a Twitter user, Rabbit Hole, so credit to Rabbit Hole for this one. But it's very clear when you see it drawn out that there is a race-baiting industrial complex, sort of a corporate entity and, you know, related entities. And so they when they see a story that they can especially take out of context, like my case, it's easy to take out of context. And by the way, today it's now stretched into anti-Semitic. Just process that for a moment. That, let's see, Jeffrey Greenblatt, yeah, Jonathan Greenblatt, he said, Adam's remarks about the black community are flat-out racist and should be condemned by all, period. Now, I'm not sure if he's aware that black conservatives did not condemn it. I wonder what he thinks about that. So, yes, this... And he says, I believe in council, not cancel, but council culture. So I hope, talking about me, I hope he'll apologize and work to educate himself. So Jonathan Greenblatt of the ADL says that I should be apologizing. Now, he didn't specify what the apology was for, which you understand is the problem, right? If he knew what I had to apologize for, he wouldn't ask me for it, because I'll explain that later. If he had any idea what I said, it's obviously he didn't know what I said in context. He probably knew what I said, but not in context. He wouldn't ask me to explain it more. Because have you noticed that the media has completely eliminated my explanation that the reason that things are tense racially is that the public is being sold a nonstop narrative of white people being enemies and the cause of all discrimination and white supremacy and all that stuff. Now, have you seen anybody in the news? You know, most of you have seen lots of coverage. Have you seen anybody in the news who accurately said, oh, Adams is talking about ESG and DEI and CRT and how those are going to have an obvious impact on racial harmony, and it's already having a terrible impact. Have you seen it? Yeah. Now, just imagine this. I'm double trending on Twitter today. Dilbert is trending, and my name is trending. I'm two of the five trending things on Twitter. And zero members of the media have reported what I said in context. None. Zero. Zero members of the media have reported what I said in its proper context. Not one. Am I wrong? You've all been watching the coverage. How many said that they connected it to the racial training that's happening in the public, and what the obvious impact of that would be? Yeah. Now, the reason that they can't report that is, you tell me, what's the reason that they can't report my actual context? Too complex, that's part of it. It's not simple. Because it would implicate them. It would implicate them as the problem, right? The media is the problem. How much trouble do you think, or how much, you know, trouble would there be if they simply had not reported on me? Suppose I had just said what I said on social media, and that was it, and the media never picked it up. It wouldn't even be anything. Because the people who saw it were like, eh. It actually didn't make much of an impact. The actual original comments made almost no impact. Because people, you know, were more likely to know me as a live streamer and, you know, have a better idea what I'm up to. It was the media that made this a problem. Now, of course, they'll say, but Scott, you're the one who said it. And this would be a good time to do my impression of an NPC. Now, you've seen some of this, but I'm compiling my list of NPC things. Now, an NPC is a non-player character in a video game. And since we live in a simulation, there are lots of them. And here are the things you want to do if you're an NPC and you want to contribute to this conversation, but you have no ability to add anything useful, right? Oh, somebody's saying that Greenblatt is calling me a Holocaust denier. Just think about that. A Holocaust denier. Because I said it would be hard to count the number of dead. Does that sound like a Holocaust denier? It's hard to get an exact count of a horrible situation in World II. So that's a Holocaust denier. Okay. So you can see that the cancellation is going deeper. Do you know why the cancellation has to look for new stuff? Because the stuff they found wasn't real. And they're, at this point, people are realizing that the initial claim isn't real, that I didn't actually say something as offensive as they think. And once they realize that, they're going to have to keep with the narrative, so they're going to have to find some new stuff to add to the laundry list. I think Holocaust denier might be the, what do you call it, jumping the shark point? Holocaust denier. All right, so here are the things the NPCs will say. And I like to do this in the NPC voice. Scott, the real problem here that you don't seem to understand is that you're a horrible narcissist and nobody likes you. I've seen quite a bit of that. Makes you wonder, what would be the point of that tweet? You know, I'd like to go on Twitter, and I'd like to be useful. I'd like to say something insightful. I think I'll just insult this guy. NPC. Then, of course, there's the NPC. The First Amendment is not the same as corporations making monetary decisions. Why don't you understand, Scott? Why don't you understand that the First Amendment only protects free speech from the government, not from corporations? They can do what they want. Well, NPCs. NPCs, thank you for pointing that out. That's the first time I've ever heard it. And also, if you're an NPC, you should always point out that swimming is one of the best forms of exercise. You could just insert that in any exercise conversation, and people will say, "Oh, wow, didn't know that." The other one that used to be sensible but is now stupid is this one. You said those exact words. Whenever you hear that, you said those exact words, that person is always wrong. And that's a tell for realizing they don't know the context. And it's also a tell for understanding that they don't know that almost everything in the news is taken out of context. So lots of times it's what people said, it's just out of context. So the dumbest thing you could say, you'd have to be an NPC to say that, is, you said those exact words, Scott. Don't deny it. Those are your words, the exact words. Did you say these words? Let me quote them and put them in a tweet. Did you say these words? Are these the words that came out of your mouth? Did you say yes? Yes? Okay. Anybody who believes that the exact words will tell them something useful is not living in the present. There might have been a time when it was possible, but in 2023, every time you hear those were his exact words or hers, you know that it's a hoax. It's something out of context. And here's the other one that's funny. Scott, apparently you didn't understand there are consequences to actions. What? Is there somebody who doesn't understand there are consequences to actions? Anyway, so if you want to be an NPC, that's your material. Go with that. All right, so Jonathan Greenblatt. Now remember, there are some people who are, you know, race and ethnic grifters. Grifter being somebody who makes their money by bringing up race stuff. Jonathan Greenblatt, I believe, could you give me a fact check on this? Doesn't he get paid to complain about stuff like this? If you get paid to look for injustice, how much are you going to find? It's like somebody who's a ghost hunter. All right, I'm going to pay you to find ghosts. How many did you find? Well, are you paying me by the ghost? Yes, I am. I found quite a few. Found quite a few ghosts. So Jonathan Greenblatt, who gets paid to find ghosts, he found some ghosts. Good job. And he would like to have me apologize for what I don't know. And then he would have me re-educated. Do you believe that I need to be re-educated? And what exactly would they tell me? Would the re-education say you should move closer to people who don't like you? Is that what the education would be? It's a good strategy in life if you know there's a demographic group that has been poisoned by the media to be primed not to like you. Should you move close to them? Well, I think the re-education would say that I should. So I'd like to know more about the re-education, if somebody can find that out. Would it be teaching me that you should spend more time with the people who have been primed to dislike you and think you're the problem? Huh. Hartwig doesn't count as an education. You might be right about that. All right. This brings us to what I'll call the Dr. Drew hypothesis about this situation. I guess he said on a podcast yesterday, quote, what Scott is up to, I don't know. But he's always up to something. Does that sound like me? He's a hypnotist. Okay, fair enough. And he's a persuasion expert. And he's been playing with the idea of how to create hoaxes. So he's up to something here. Interesting hypothesis. David Boxenhorn added to that, and he said, my take is that Scott Adams is locating himself at the fulcrum of power. From now on, any conversation about race in the U.S. will have to include him. Huh. What do you think of that? Have I located myself at the fulcrum of power, and from now on, any conversation about race in the U.S. will have to include me? Well, it does look like that, doesn't it? It looks like that. So I asked on Twitter, what is the first rule of persuasion? What's the first rule of persuasion? Getting attention, right? Attention is persuasion. I think Mike Cernovich says this directly. But persuaders know this, right? Attention is number one. That's what Trump did so well. Trump sucked all the energy from the other candidates, got all the attention. Yeah, so attention is the first rule of persuasion. If you were going to have a conversation today about ESG and CRT and its effect on society, who would be somebody you'd want to talk to? Like, who would be somebody who'd really get you some clicks if you were talking about the way the public is being educated on DEI and ESG and CRT? Who would be a person who would just naturally just jump out as a provocative voice that would have something to say? Interesting. And let me ask you this. Do you think that the poisoning of racial relations that's coming through CRT and ESG and DEI, do you think that's one of the biggest problems in the country? Or is it a small problem or a big problem? Is it more important than, let's say as a existential risk to the United States, is the way that the youth are being educated, specifically the CRT, ESG, DEI stuff, is that Is that something that could be fixed? Is it fixable? In a theory, like it'd be really, really hard, but is it fixable? I would think so. I would think so. Let me tell you something that's in my canceled book. Yeah. Well, let me get to that in a moment. First of all, here's my take on CRT, ESG, and DEI. Now, this is the same take that I took in the Dilbert comic before it got canceled. It's still going to be on the Locals platform, but... these are good ideas, well-meaning ideas, that eventually go wrong. And why do they go wrong? What is the mechanism? So let's say, you know, CRT and ESG and DEI, they all have high-level goals, which in themselves sound good. Yeah, what happens is the grifting class gets in there, and then everybody has to signal to the grifting class. So the grifter is the one who's making money on introducing stuff. You know, they'll start to embarrass the people who don't do it, and you know, then everybody needs to signal that they're on board, and then if you're not on board, you look like a racist. So you can see the mechanism is very clear. Somebody has a good idea with lofty goals, and then it's completely mismanaged by, you know, the grifters and the moneymakers and the packagers and the, you know, the politicians and the managers. And then the people who are not directly in the money flow are scared to death to say it's bad because it's been, you know, introduced as an excellent thing. So the most Dilbert thing that I could ever teach you is that the fact that they're great ideas is almost a guarantee that they're going to destroy something. Because the great idea is what attracts all the energy. Hey, that's a great idea. Then all the grifters come in. They turn it into the opposite of what you wanted. And then everything falls apart. All right, here's a big, big theme. I believe that everybody has an operating system, meaning that there's a go-to kind of default way you see the world. And that some of these operating systems are really good, and some of them are really unproductive. Thank you. That's very nice of you. And here's the worst operating system. I'm a victim, right? And a million people have said this, but I'm going to add to it, so it won't be so boring in a moment, right? The worst operating system is that you're a victim. Now, suppose you actually are. Suppose you actually can totally draw a line from what other people did to bad things that happened to you. Should you then, because it would be accurate, it's accurate, should a victim mentality be the one you would adopt? It can help you a little. Complaining definitely helps. Complaining always helps, right? But it only helps you up to a point, and then it destroys everything. Now, let me give you a model that is better than better than CRT, better than ESG, better than DEI, because they're all victim. They're sort of, even though they don't maybe present it that way, they are a victim vibe, wouldn't you say? Why are you telling me to move on? Stop saying that, right? It's just the worst thing you can say in a live stream. It's just the worst thing you could do. Just don't do that anymore, okay? So here's the better operating system, the way you should go through life, a reciprocity operating system, reciprocity, in which you see your value being only a reflection of what you've added to the system or the situation, right? Reciprocity can get you everything. Victim stuff can get you some stuff in the short term, right? In the short term, it can get you. In the long term, the only thing that works for anybody is reciprocity. Right? It's the reason you want to do business with somebody, because they'll do something for you. Reciprocity. The part that you don't see of my current drama in the news is how many people have contacted me privately, especially black Americans, and saying some version of thank you for helping me personally. And I didn't realize how many black Americans I'd personally helped, but they're contacting me and saying, you know, I know the charges are untrue. You know, obviously you're not a racist. So that's sort of been happening behind the scenes. People don't see that. Now that's the reciprocity operating system, right? I did something for some people, apparently a number of things over the years. Didn't really remember them, but that little bit of giving without asking caused these same people to surface years later, you know, sometimes years later, to say, I got your back. That's reciprocity. They got my back. In fact, everything good that I think that's ever happened to me is because one or more people I was with got into a reciprocity mindset, right? The people I've worked with in lots of contexts. Now, here's what I would say would fix race relations. A reciprocity mindset. That's it. Black America has to give us something. Now, you didn't see that coming, did you? That's right. There is a huge impulse in white America to help black America. I know because I've done a lot of stuff in that zone. Now, a lot of people were just tuning in to me for the first time. You don't know that I tried working with Black Lives Matter. You don't know that I supported Colin Kaepernick. You don't know that I supported, was it prison reform? You don't know that I wrote in favor of reparations, a different form of it, not the one you're seeing. You don't know, basically, you don't know that I've been working for years and years to try to figure out how to improve the black American situation. Now, for those of you who are new and don't know anything about me, could those of you who have watched me for a while just confirm that? Because, you know, I do it in public, so you would know. All right. So, and I know, and by the way, I should say that I did all of that, all the things I mentioned, were in the context of my primary audience not liking it. You know that as well, right? That it cost me a tremendous amount of money to do something my audience said was a waste of time. Because my audience was saying, you're not going to help. It's not going to help. Don't do it. Because there's no reciprocity. Or the grifters will get in the way, or the government will screw it up, or something. There's always something, right? So at great personal expense for the last several years, I could have made a killing just pretending to agree with everybody. Do you know how much money I could have made live streaming from the Trump era on if all I did was agree with the Republicans, like Murdoch does? Right? The story I told you before, Murdoch says, our customers want this, so we'll do this. I say, what you want is not necessarily what's good for you. Right? You've seen me do it over and over again. I tell you, you might not like this, but it's good for you. You should hear the other argument all the time. So here's what my problem was. Having worked quite a bit and at great personal expense and risk, I was doing things that realized have no reciprocity element to them. Now, I wasn't doing it to get something back. Like, that wasn't the idea. Like, I would have felt good if I'd, you know, made a difference, etc. That would have felt good. But I wasn't doing it that somebody would do something back for me. But here's what I'm going to ask for. I'm going to ask for an ask. It's very direct. And this is an ask for black Americans, right? I'm going to ask for something in return because a lot of us are very pro-black America and want it to work. And I think it's where you can get the most leverage. That's always been my argument. If you help black America, this is actually a Black Lives Matter Hawk Newsom thing that I got from him, got from Hawk, that if you help black America, you end up helping everybody. Because it would be hard to fix education for black Americans without it sort of accidentally fixing it for everybody, right? So it's like this great lever. I'm going to add to the NPC list. I'm seeing an NPC comment. Keep digging. So the NPCs on YouTube keep saying, keep digging. Now, that's got to be an NPC, right? It's like completely unrelated to what's happening right now. So here's the ask. I'm asking Black Americans to understand that white Americans feel very, very uncomfortable and worried, that the narrative is demonizing them, and that has a really big negative impact. And if you don't see it coming, that will be bad for you. And I don't want that. I don't want tensions to grow to the point where, like, I don't know, gets out of hand. So I need Black Americans to understand that their actions have an impact on other people. And if they reorient themselves in a reciprocity model, they can have almost everything they want. It just won't happen right away. Here's what reciprocity would look like. Black America saying, you know what? I've had a tough time with all you Republicans, but we seem to agree on school choice. So how about this? We Black Americans will give you Republicans a little bit of the benefit of a doubt. You know, sort of we'll give you something. We'll work with you, make your politicians look like they're doing a better job. But what we want in return, reciprocity, is a real fix for education. Like a real deep fix. Reciprocity. Now, you tell me that wouldn't make the world better, not only for school, not only for fixing the biggest part of systemic racism, which is the inequality in the education system, but tell me that wouldn't make everybody feel better about everybody else. Oh, wow. You just treated me with respect, and we worked on this thing together, and then we got a thing together. Does that ever go wrong? Well, I suppose it could. You know, I'm not in favor of the overtly racist comments I'm seeing in the comments. So don't appreciate those. And the less you do, of that, the better. All right. So what else? There's new Rasmussen poll. I think you'll see it maybe in a few hours, but I got a sneak peek. And it's talking about race relations. So the new Rasmussen poll is looking at people's opinions of race relations. Now, the last poll was justly criticized because there were only 130 Black Americans who were asked the question. It was a bigger poll. It was like 1,000 people were asked, but only 130 of them were Black. Now, it turns out that the... what would you guess would be the margin of error for a poll that was only 130 people? If the 130 were correctly picked, you know, to be randomized, etc. It's around 8%. About 8%. So people said, wait, that 130 is way too few people. It is. If you need to be within 2%, it's way too few people. But it's sort of an 8% margin of error, which means if it said 50% something, it might have been 42. I don't know if it really changes anything, but I don't trust that poll because it was the form of the question. But the new one is asking the question about race relations. But I'd like to make this differential. In my opinion, and this is just entirely anecdotal. Let's see if you agree with this. Agree or disagree. That race relations on an individual level are better than ever. Meaning two people standing in a room. Better than ever. Right? Yeah, everybody's saying yes on the locals. What do you say on YouTube? Individually, one-on-one, better than ever. Oh, everybody on YouTube saying no. Not everybody, but way more no's. How interesting. I thought most of you would agree with that. Because as far as I know, interracial marriage is up. You know, contact is up. And I never feel anything like any kind of racial thing when I'm talking to somebody individually. Like, you don't feel any racial anything. You're just talking to somebody. But that's different from what we think about, like, race, right? So individually, I think it's all better. Who you hire, who you date, who you hang around with, all better, way better. But our feelings about the other group, as a group, not as individuals, but as a group, I believe are not good. And so here's what Rasmussen said. 41% say race relations are getting worse. 41%. And interesting, I'll give you more breakdown. Let me see if you could guess the next number. What percentage of American adults do you think said that race relations in the nation today are good or excellent? How many people would have said the race relations are good or excellent? You're very close, 24%. 24%. I don't know how you do it. Your guessing is amazing. Yes, 24%. But that isn't much change since January of 1 year ago. Let's see, 41% now say race relations in America are getting worse, but it's, that's down. Well, okay. Only 18% now say race relations in America are getting better. So only 18% say it's getting better, and over 40% say it's getting worse. How many people, this will be another one, here's another tough question. People were also asked, is the way racial issues are treated by schools and universities, so that gets you to the CRT, stuff, is the way racial issues are treated by schools and universities helping to decrease racism? How many believe that the way the schools and universities are treating things decreases racism? Take a guess, what percentage? Oh, you're so good. You're so close. Yeah, you're very close. 23%. They think that the ESG stuff and CRT-like stuff is helping. All right, and 44% say schools are making racism worse. And 20% say not much impact. All right, so if we didn't believe the Rasmussen poll about what black people think about white people, do you believe the Rasmussen poll that a whole bunch of people think race relations are bad and that the way people are being educated is making it worse? Do you think those conclusions would hold? By the way, a national poll is only 1,000 people. Did you know that? A national poll is only 1,000 people. But statistically, that's all you need. That's actually plenty. There are lots of polls that are way less than 1,000. And they're still statistically useful. But 1,000 is completely useful. So this is, even if you give or take 3 or 4% on these numbers, does this support what I just said? That the way the public is being educated is making the public more uncomfortable about race, not less? What would you say? Is the case made? Yeah, the case is made. If... because I don't think there's enough room for error in these questions or this size of a poll that it would change a conclusion. Like, it might, it might be off a few percent, but it wouldn't change the conclusion that things are bad, people think they're getting worse, more people than think it's getting better, and that they can track it to the way they're being primed. Now, I would add to that, the impact of the media, the impact of all the cancelers. Look at how much dopamine was produced by canceling me. Think about this for a moment. How do you train a dog? You give him a treat. And it works every time. And it works for basically any animal that can be trained. A treat. Now, when people, when somebody gets canceled, like me, and everybody gets to send their mean tweets, do you think they get a dopamine hit when they feel they've they've dunked on me? Of course they do. Yeah, it's a whole dopamine cycle. So I'm basically caught up in a dopamine cycle that's aided by an economic model that wants to boost every claim of, you know, impropriety. And here we are. So if you wanted to look at this and say, this is about what Scott said, it totally is. It totally is. You know, and I am the primary trigger for everything that happened. And of course, you know, I knew there would be some, let's say, consequences. That was obvious. But wouldn't you say that the only reason we're here, like the situation, is because it's monetized and people are getting a dopamine hit from it? It's not about what's good or bad for Black Americans. You know, once again, Black America is ignored in favor of chasing ghosts. Right? Oh, we'll just go chase this ghost. This is cheap. This will get us a lot of clicks. So we're in the chasing ghost phase. All right. So, ladies and gentlemen, what do you think? Have I put myself at the fulcrum of power on one of the most important questions in the United States and the only person who can explain it in a useful way? Or have I thrown away my career and my reputation for nothing? To be determined. Well, this movie is not over. There are some more twists and turns coming. I know some of them you don't, but stay tuned for that. But we probably do need to. Figure out some smarter way to be. Bumpy is not well informed. Sorry, Bumpy. So the opinions of me have formed into two movies, and the two movies are roughly this. People who understand the context and have no problem with me, and people who only saw the news coverage with, you know, some statements I made that were provocative. And they have a whole different view of me. Now, that's never going to change, right? It's not like everybody's going to listen to the context. So that's my permanent situation. I'm permanently banned or permanently canceled. There's no way to get back. Because most of the country isn't going to do any homework to find out what's going on. Right? Yeah, my books are all canceled, even the backlist. Even the already published books are going to be pulled off of Amazon and everywhere else. Right. So, in my opinion, reciprocity is the only thing that will save us from ESG and the other, you know, victimization, demonization theories. Watch how today there will be zero media coverage of what I said just now. Watch. There will be zero media coverage of my actual point about the way we're being trained is poisoning the people. You can see it in the Rasmussen poll. Shows that people are racially poisoned at the moment. And that has an obvious outcome, which is not good. And that we should be more reciprocating. And it doesn't mean monetarily, right? Just do things that are good for each other. And things will be good. All right. Yeah, the MSN. And are you surprised that, let's see if you're surprised. MSNBC never contacted me for an interview. Think about that. Never asked. CNN never asked. There were quite a few media people who tried to contact me. All right, so let me give credit to the ones who did try to contact me. Of all the newspapers that canceled me, how many of them contacted me before deciding to cancel? What's your guess? Because remember, these are news organizations. Every one of these is a news organization. Zero. Yeah. Zero newspapers. These are your news sources. zero even contacted me. And by the way, they can all contact me easily. Newspapers can get me easily. They just call the syndicate and they connect me, right? In the old days. So imagine that. They're news industries, and none of the ones I mentioned contacted me. All right. Since then, you know, after the cancellation started and it became a story, how many contacted me to get context? What would you guess? Maybe a dozen? Almost everybody who contacted me was a podcaster who had not already said something about me. Pretty much, I'm trying to think if anybody in the major media contacted me. People were asking me for a comment. That's how they dealt with it. A few of them asked me for a quote. A quote? Are you kidding me? How in the world is a quote going to give you any context? That's like not even trying to do news, right? Now, to be fair, the Washington Post did have a reporter who was talking to me, but I wasn't making comments. But that was after the fact. So that was after the Washington Post had already canceled me. Then they got curious. Or at least one of their writers did. I make a great villain. That's what Andrew Tate said. That's funny. Yeah. So would you say that nobody except the podcasters wanted context? Do you think that's a fair statement? The major media, including the entire newspaper industry, didn't even ask for context. Didn't even have curiosity about the story. Yeah. Haven't heard from Fox News either. So Fox News so far is not covering it. I think they may have just covered it as a news item, but not an opinion. I think the opinion people have not touched it. Yeah. So how dangerous am I right now? Think about it. How dangerous am I to the way everything works? But what if people found out that their opinions were assigned to them by people who have bad intentions, meaning that they're looking to make money, they're not looking to inform or help you? Yeah. Now, let me ask you this. What's the popularity of the media? Have you seen any numbers on that lately? The news media? Their popularity is like 8% or something like that. And they canceled me. Think about it. Just think about this. They're the least trusted entity, I think, maybe less than Congress, I'm not sure. But one of the least trusted entities in the United States canceled me. Imagine how bad I would feel if I'd been canceled by anybody who was respected or trusted. I'm not respected by anybody who's respected or trusted. You know, the media's... Now, let me adjust that. My cartoon syndication company have been solid, good people the whole time. They just didn't have any choice. You know, they had to do what they had to do. But, so they're not bad people. They're all good people at the cartoon syndicate. Yeah. All right. So there's more to develop on this story. It's surprising that being canceled is not as bad as you think. And here's why it's not so bad. Privately, the amount of support I'm getting is just through the roof. I've never seen anything like it. But people don't want to necessarily back me in public, which I understand. Totally understand. But privately, it's all 100% on my side. 100%. The one exception was somebody who had to make a show because his wife was mad. You know, his wife had not heard the context, so she was mad. So he had to put on a show to, you know, show that he was supporting his wife. But that doesn't count. That's totally allowed. If you're supporting your spouse, say anything you want. That's your first job. You know, his job is not to make me happy. His job is to support his spouse, which he did. Which he did. All right. No, it wasn't Bill Burr. I've never talked to Bill Burr. Big fan, though. All right. Steve says, you've been wanting to get canceled for years. Well, that's another theory. All right. Let's see. What do you think is happening? What? Suing? What would I sue for? What would I sue for? See, the trouble is that the a trial would look just like the real world. I don't think I could get a jury to see things in context. I think that half of them would see it out of context, half would see it in, even if they saw the context, probably. How do you get your books back? Well, that hasn't been worked out, but in theory, the canceling of me is such an extreme economic act that I believe that, and they've promised to give me the rights back, I believe that they'll follow through on that. I think they will be professional and make sure that happens. How many people are going to understand that I was trying to shock the system? Do you think anybody's going to figure that out? The people on Locals were in on it from the beginning, but... yeah. Stop the hate. Well, I wouldn't go that far. Yeah, sometimes you got to shake the bugs. What would it take for me to re-identify as black? It might be too late. Although that would be funny, wouldn't it? Maybe I should identify as black again. Well, you know, maybe the, you know, think about it. The whole time I identified as black, I never had any problems, did I? That's a good idea. Well, let's take a vote. Should I identify as black? Because I used to. I used to identify as black. Should I re-identify as black? Because it's optional. Apparently anybody can identify as anything. All right. I think I got one or two no's. A few no's. The new book is all an unknown at this point in terms of the timing. The only thing I know is that Amazon already says it's not being carried. That's all I know. So, bring back the garbage man philosopher. I have so many good ideas for the Dilbert comic now. There's so many things. It's still on Audible. You know, the Audible contract is a separate contract, so I don't know exactly how that's going to work. I was wondering about that myself. It could be there's just a timing issue and they'll cancel it. But here's one of the things I was thinking of doing. So my book, How to Fail at Almost Everything and Still Win Big, if I get my rights back to that, that's the one that's ideal for black Americans. So it's ideal for anybody who's young, but it's ideal for black Americans specifically because it's sort of all the things that you don't get told if you don't have, let's say, successful business people or successful people in your life. So it's basically the things that, you know, parents would tell you if they were wise parents, you had two of them, you know, you're raised just right and all that. But it's sort of perfectly designed for a young person who doesn't have all the guidance that they need. But anyway, to finish my point, I might make it available just to homeschoolers. Or, I'm not sure exactly, but I want to make sure that that penetrates the homeschool market because that's where it's most useful. I will go so far as to say this. Any young black kid who read that book would probably do fine in life, no matter where they came from. Like if you embraced what's in the book, which is hard if you're a teenager, of course, right? It's kind of hard to get a teenager to focus on a self-help book. But if they did, it would be transformative. And almost everybody agrees with that who's read the book. I got fooled. Somebody got fooled by me. Well, I was thinking that if there's a digital version of the book, there could be a free homeschooler version. Then maybe I just sell the curriculum guide for $1 or something. Yeah, it might be. I'd have to monetize it, but I could monetize it cheap. Make it a donation thing, maybe. All right. So let me ask you this. Who has added more to the race conversation in America than I have this week? Who's done more useful work in this domain than I have this week? Name anybody who did more. And no one. No one. There's a giant red pill coming for a lot of people. Once people realize how much power they've handed me and then how I use it, it's going to be a total mind fuck. All right, well, the media will be sending me more energy and power today. I'm going to go do some other stuff. Wow. There's a lot of stuff that's going well for me as well. So don't worry about me. Things are pretty good for me. This guy is insane. The media will stop talking about it. Yeah. What? Rob. So Rob was not here when I did the NPC stuff, so he's doing NPC stuff. Rob, we already said what the NPCs say. You picked one of them. You picked one of them. All right, that's all for now, YouTube. I'm going to go talk to the locals people for a minute. Bye for now.